is Pesach, Tafshin Samach Zayin, Erev Pesach. Our subject today is the order of the Haggadah. The events of the night are called the Seder, which means the order. However, when we look through the Haggadah, we have a hard time discerning exactly what order was the Baal Haggadah, who was probably Rebbe, the one who wrote the Mishnah. What order the Baal Haggadah was trying to follow. It seems like a hodgepodge of different information, not really coherently, one piece not coherently attached to the next. So that is the first objective of today. What is the order? What is the underlying key that will help us understand the order of the Seder? Second of all, we are here to define two very common terms that somehow we use loosely, and we need to know precisely what they mean, and that is the term Geula, a very big word this Yontif, right? And of course Pidyon, because when we finish Magid, we finish telling the entire story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, what we are thanking Kadosh Baruch Hu for is two things, right? We are thanking for Hashem for Al Geula Seinu Va'al Pedut Nafshenu, our Geula and the Pidyon, the redemption, the Geula, which we lightly translate as what? Redemption also, and Pidyon, some type of redemption of our souls. So those two words, what do they mean? Okay, so in order to start digging into what is the key to the order of the Seder, we have to begin with asking a few questions and making a few observations about the Seder. Now, we've done this many times, and maybe we haven't really had the clarity to know what we were doing and why. We're telling the story of our history, but with a very definite perspective. And the perspective seems to alternate, to vacillate between talking about our servitude, our avdus, and talking about our chayrus, our freedom. In fact, all the simonim, all the symbolic things we do really represent the interlacing between our freedom and our slavery. So for example, we start with Kiddush, we sanctify the Yontif, that's how we start every Yontif Kiddush. And then we wash our hands, Orchatz and Karpas. What is that about? Orchatz, if I ask you to divide it up in terms of Avdut or Cherut, slavery or freedom, what is Orchatz?
Freedom.
Freedom, because? Because why? Freedom? Because in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, which is reminds us of when we had our status and our home, we were not in Galus, we were Nig'al, we were redeemed. We had our own autonomous government and our own country, and we followed our laws. At that time, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the Kohanim, who were makbid on Tumah and Tahara, and the people also who had a much more elevated sense of Tumah and Tahara because they worked with it every day, would wash their hands even before eating vegetables. Okay, so we're remembering Cheiros, freedom. And then what is Karpas for? Karpas is? Well, not entirely. The salt water that we dip the Karpas into is to remember the slavery. But the Karpas itself is to remind us that as kings would have some type of hors d'oeuvre before the meal. So this too is like a little, not really nutritional food, but it reminds us that this is how kings would eat. Kings would eat with an aperitif, some type of little tasty treat before the meal. So that's how we act like kings, and yet we dip it in salt water. We are avadim, we remember our slavery, and yet we're conducting ourselves like free people, not only free people, the heads of free people. So that's karpas. Then what happens with yachatz? We break the matzah. Half is lechem oni. We're about to say halach ma'anya, the bread of our affliction, the way we ate when we were slaves. But half is afikomen. What is another word for afikomen? Safun. Safun means hidden. We take the larger piece and we hide it. Now this is representative of, again, this ebb and flow of our life of Jewish history. How this world is about lechem oni, the struggles and the difficulties, the poverty and not just physical poverty. But there's something hidden for the future, and it's a larger piece. It represents the schar, the schar. There is no coincidence that this little minhag has developed, and it's an ancient minhag, that the child hides the afikomen and only returns it for a reward, because the afikomen, as my great-grandfather used to say, represents the schar in Olam Haba, the reward. It's about the reward in the future after all is said and done. The larger portion is waiting for us. Here is lechem oni, but there is the schar. There is the afikomen. And after the afikomen, by the way, we eat nothing, because when we experience the schar of all our mitzvahs in the future, we realize that the sweetest taste of all is the taste of the mitzvah itself. We eat nothing after the afikomen. The sweet taste of the mitzvah, which becomes schar, is the future. So now we have again avdus and cheiros. We have the lechemoni of this world, the geula, the schar of the next world. We're constantly vacillating. And then we start with halach ma'anya, and we talk about the same ebb and flow. This year we are avadim, but next year b'nei chorin. Even the manishtana. My grandfather used to say at the Seder, manishtana is not a question, how is this night different? It's an observation. Manishtana halayla hazeh, how different is this night? How unusual is this night? Because look, we're doing four strange things, and they don't have the same theme. So we have two different themes going on. This is the child who is aware of this. First of all, we eat only matzah, and we eat only morar. That's avdus. But we dip, and we lean. That's cheiros. So how unusual is this night that we are constantly vacillating, moving back and forth between avdus and cheiros? So which is it? Are we slaves or are we free? Are we both? We were redeemed from Egypt. So is this just remembering our slavery, or is tonight about real slavery and real freedom? And are they really divisible? Is it possible to divide them, or are they essentially intertwined? And is everything we're doing indicating that they are essentially intertwined? Now here begins our questions. Our questions. What is the order of the Seder? We understand that we're setting the tone with symbolism and observations, that this night is a combination of two different things. That's clear. But the Magid section begins with Avadim Hayinu, and that's the section that we need some type of key to show how one paragraph is linked to the next, because as we said, it seems like a hodgepodge. So let's ask a number of questions, because until we see the questions, we won't appreciate the answer as much. So the first paragraph starts out like this. You begin to describe what this night is about. Avadim hayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. We were slaves. V'yotzi'enu Hashem Elokeinu misham. God took us out of there. B'yad chazaka b'zorot netuya, with an outstretched arm and a strong hand. Does that sound like the beginning of the telling of a story? Yes, of course it does. Those 12 words seem to tell us that we're beginning to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But everything after that, for about 8 paragraphs, has nothing to do with the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, doesn't tell the story at all. We diverge now. For example, here we say, if Hashem had not taken us out of Mitzrayim, us and our children would all be slaves to Paro in Egypt, and even if we are Chachamim and Nevonim and Zekenim, and we know the entire Torah, we still have a mitzvah to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and whoever tells it more and more and speaks about it more is praised. Is this the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? No. So what would you call this? What is being taught us here?
Tomorrow.
A halacha. A halacha is being taught here. You have a halacha. The halacha is that it is a mitzvah to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and it has no relevance to what you know about it and how educated you are. And how many other times a day you've spoken about it, it's irrelevant. There's a mitzvah on this night to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is a halacha. Okay? Yeah. Let's stop here and just make an observation. The fact that we have a mitzvah to speak about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is derived from the pasuk, v'higadeta lebincha. You must tell your child. Now, there are many rules, laws, that instruct us to talk or mention or remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. For example, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim in Yom Tovim, in Shabbos. Mm-hmm. We have to say that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim twice a day. We have to say it in Shabbos. That's why we say Shema twice a day, because we discuss Yetzias Mitzrayim, especially in the Parsha of Tzitzis, right? We talk about it. So here, this is different. This halacha is different. This is the only time of the year that there is a mitzvah doraisa, and the only other mitzvah doraisa is eating the matzahs. Hallel and the Arba Kosos, they are part of mitzvahs drabanan, including the Arba Kosos, of course. I'm sorry. Hallel and Marar. That's drabanan. Okay? But the mitzvah doraisa of the night is to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, the halacha is termed vihigadata, which means you must tell it even if no one asks you to tell it. You must take the initiative of telling the story. You must tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, hopefully to your children. And if there's no children, you say it to who's ever there. And if there's no one there, you say it to yourself. Because the halacha, which has nothing to do with learning about it, so it doesn't matter if you're Talmud Chacham or whatever, the halacha is to keep the story alive. To keep the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim alive, that it should pass from generation to generation, that it should exist in the world. The word Pesach is Pesach. The mouth should speak. The mouth has an obligation to open up and articulate the stories, that the story should exist in this world. And that's why it says here, there's that strange little vav. It says, we have to know that Hashem took us out with great power, and if He had not taken us out, we would all still be slaves, which means that every future generation has an obligation to understand the relevance of Yetzias Mitzrayim to their life. What would the world have looked like if the precedent had never been established that human beings are not to be slaves to other human beings? Realize that Pesach and all the miracles of Pesach were the first time in history that the purpose of the creation was finally revealed. The fact that there was a creator, that was knowledge from the time Adam was created. In fact, one of the halachas were that you were not allowed to serve the natural forces. But the fact that that humanity had a purpose and a goal was never divinely revealed up until Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yes, the fact that there was a creator was known. But the purpose of humanity, clearly expressed, was never brought to mankind's clear knowledge until this moment. So now we know, through these people, what is it that Hashem wants from humanity, Jews and non-Jews alike? What demands is Hashem making? And that story, that message must be kept alive. And that's why we say, realize the impact this has had on every future generation. What would the world have looked like if this had never happened? Okay, there are still countries that look like what the world would have looked like if this never happened. And nobody wants to be there. And that's why va'afilu, and so even if we're all chachamim, it's irrelevant. We have a mitzvah to speak about it because it's about keeping the story alive. So first of all, but at least we know here that we're not beginning to tell the narrative of the story, because we said 12 words, and then we went into a halacha about who has to speak about it and how much you have to speak about it. Here's the next paragraph. Does this sound like the story of the Exodus from Egypt? Maaseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, right? We talk about the five Rabbanim here that were sitting in Bnei Brak and speaking about Yetzias Mitzrayim until their Talmidim, they're obviously talking to their Talmidim, told them, Higiyazman Kriya Shema Shel Shachris, now you have to say Kriya Shema Shel Shachris, which also talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim, but that's different. One is Vehigadata, and one is remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. So what is this? Is this part of the story, or is this another law? It's another halacha. And what is it? First of all, it describes that even the smartest have to speak about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and also tells you that you could speak about it all night until the morning. Then comes davening, that the mitzvah extends all the way till the morning. So it's again it's an example and developing the halacha. Okay, here's the next paragraph. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, and he talks about that he's like 70 years old, and he always had a question in halacha: to what extent is the mitzvah of zecher, remembering Yom Tzeitzcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Kol Yemei Chayecha, because now we're not talking about Vehigadita, but now we're talking about the mitzvah of remembering, which is saying it to yourself. So he said, Ben Zoma finally came and said, it means that you have to do it at night and in the morning. Yemei Chayecha Hayamim, that teaches you have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim in the morning. And the word Kol Yemei Chayecha reminds you that you have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, remember Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. Chachamim added another dimension. It teaches you have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim in this world and remember Yetzias Mitzrayim in the next world. Okay? So this doesn't, on the outset, seem like it has anything to do with the halachas of this night, because we're talking about the daily halacha of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay? So we'll get back to this, but the question is, what is the purpose of this paragraph? Okay? Next. All of a sudden, we break. We go in a completely new direction. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Blessed is Hashem that He gave Torah to Klal Yisrael. And that's like a header for the next section. So we have to wonder what that header is for. Blessed is Hashem who gave us Torah. And then it says, Keneged Arba Banim. So why is this phrase the introductory phrase to the four children? Baruch HaMakom, blessed is the place, HaMakom, blessed is Him, He gave us Torah, blessed is Him again. And then there are four children. That's a question. We're going to go back and answer all these questions. And here comes four children. Chacham Rasha Tam and V'she'eno Dei Elishol. If you notice, it's the She'eno Yodei Elishol, the one who doesn't even know how to ask the question, that you must initiate, as we just said. And here is a proof text, the Higadita Labincha Bayom Hahu. It says you should initiate with the one who doesn't even know how to ask the question, as it says, Behigadita Labincha Bayom Hahu. You should tell your child on that day. So this is clear that it's the one who isn't asking that we take the initiative and we must tell them, okay, on our own, the story of what happened. Everyone else asked, and we have specific answers we have to give them. But Pesach is about speaking even when there's no request for the information. By the way, my grandfather used to say that nowadays, you've heard this if you've been here before, nowadays it seems like the halacha has been turned upside down. Instead of the higadita labincha, you should tell your children, it's become the higadita la'avicha li'imecha. You should come home with these huge books of Divrei Torah and spend the whole night, but it's not the halacha. He said, save it for the meal, save it for the lunches. The halacha of Seder night is the other direction. And the kids they should say something, but they have to understand what the direction of the information, okay, is on that night. Now, so we have the four children. Okay, so, and again, it's almost like the Manishtana. They're asking about what's happening tonight, and we still don't get into the story. So the question is, why is this inserted here? Put it either back with the Manishtana, okay? Why is it here? The children that are asking what it's all about. And then we do not answer them. We go back to a new halacha. And the question is, why isn't that halacha back in the halacha section before the four children ask their question? So here's the next halacha that we come about, which sounds very similar to Elazar ben Azariah, who was wondering when you had to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim and all that. The halacha now mentioned is Higadita Labincha. You should tell your children. Okay, Yachol mi Rosh Chodesh. Do you start on Rosh Chodesh Nisan? No. Talmud says, B'yom hahu, on that day. Okay, maybe on the day leading up to, you know, or after Tesvav. No, not mib odyom, not when it's the day. Talmud lomer bavor zeh, quotes the phrase bavor zeh on account of this. Bavor zeh lo amarti ela b'shah sheyesh matzah umara munachem lefanecha. No, you have to speak about Pesach when the matzah mara are in front of you, and the proof text is the following, v'higadita levincha, and then bayom hahu, so you think, oh, maybe it's yom, right? So no, bavor zeh, because it says, bavor zeh asa Hashem li b'tesi mi Mitzrayim, bavor zeh means matzah mara, so you have to talk about it when there's matzah mara, that's at night. So this is an interesting halacha, but why isn't it earlier? That's our question. Now we finally get to what sounds like the answer to the story, to the questions. Why are we doing all this? Mitchila ovdei avoda zara hayu avoseinu. In the beginning, our ancestors worshipped idols. V'achshav, and now Hashem brought us close to His service. And he starts quoting. And he quotes the bris Hashem made with Avraham, the ekachas that he took Avraham me'ever hanar, and he walked him through Eretz Canaan, and he increased his descendants. And he gave him Yitzchak and Yaakov and Esav, but Esav got Harseir, and Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. Okay, and Hashem had made a promise to Yaakov and to all the Avos, and he kept that promise because he made a promise at the Bris Ben Absarim that your children will be enslaved, but then they'll be redeemed. And now, and Vayihisha Amda, and that promise has stood for us, and Hashem has saved us. And go see how this all developed, and we'll go back to Lavan, right? We go back to Lavan Harami, right? And then we begin the whole story. This is the beginning of the story. So it took 8 paragraphs to get to the answer to the story. The story goes all the way to through the Makos, you know, Dam Sardei Akinim, to all the Nisim that took place. That whole section about Rav Yossi Haglili and Rav Eliezer, Rav Akiva. How many Nisim really took place, right? That every plague really had many components to it. So there were 200 plagues altogether. There were 250 plagues altogether. Talk about all the plagues. This is all part of the story, the greatness. And then Dayenu, right? And then after Dayenu, we sum it all up. Al achas kama v'kama, how much more? So all these things Hashem did for us. And this is the story. When we finish the story, we go back into another halacha. Rabban Gamliel haya omer, whoever didn't say these 3 things, lo yatza yidei chovaso, he didn't fulfill his obligation, Pesach, Matzah, Marah. Again, why isn't this back in the halacha section? Why don't we just keep all the halachas together and the story and the questions and answers together? Pesach, Matzah, Marah. Now, we've spoken extensively, so we won't do it again, about Pesach, about the uniqueness, the transition from slavery to freedom, which Hirsch explains, is built on the basic fundamental awareness of property ownership. Remember, my family is mine, my children are mine, this house is mine. Nobody, my values are the only values that exist in this house. The door is shut. No, none of the outside values are let in. The whole very concept of basic integrity of a human being, that they have property and they have a family and it's theirs and they have values that are theirs. We spoke about matzah. Time of 2 weeks ago, the fact that the Klal Yisrael were created when they're in a moment that transcended time, the time that the concept that all things associated with time eventually erode, so there's an element of sheker, whereas all things that are eternal are not time bound, and we spoke about Zrizus in this. We didn't do too much on Marar, but we'll hold off on that now. The question is, why are these here? Why not in the earlier halachic section? And especially, it could easily have been stuck into the section about Yochel Mirosh Chodesh, because that's where it says Talmud, that when do you speak about Yetzias Mitzrayim? And it says Bavor Zeh, only when Matzah Marah are in front of you. So that would be the perfect place to add this section. After this is all done, we have a phrase standing by itself. After this halacha, Bechol dar v'dar chayav adam liros es atzmo ki lehu yatza Mitzrayim. Every generation has to see himself like he went out of Mitzrayim. Where should this have been placed? Where would have been an appropriate place for this? In the beginning, where it says, and had Hashem not taken us out, we would all be slaves to Paro in Egypt, right? Therefore, we have to tell this story. So again, why is it here? And then it quotes it, v'gada talavincha, it quotes the pasuk. Not only has Hashem redeemed our ancestors, but He has also redeemed us. Today we are redeemed, which sounds like the very beginning. And then, because we are aware of this, lefichach, therefore we have to give hodos or halel, and we begin halel. But we don't do the whole halel, we just do one paragraph, and then the story about Betzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim, and then we make the bracha, we're done with the magid section. Then we immediately proceed to eating the matzah, which is the second mitzvah d'oraisa. He got it to levincha and matzah. And of course, interspersed in this is the arba kosos, the maror, of course. And that's, we said, drabanan and the halel. So now our question is, why isn't it more in order? why don't we just have all the questions in the beginning, Manish Tana, the four children, and the whole story, and then put all the halachas afterwards, or vice versa. So the key to this entire structure, this order, this seder, is one pasuk. It's a pasuk that's quoted again and again in the Haggadah, so we should be alerted to the fact that is the operational pasuk of this night. And every single section in the Haggadah is just an embellishment on a word or a phrase from that pasuk. So for here is the pasuk. The pasuk that the entire Seder is built upon is V'higadata Levincha. Now write this down in sections. First line, V'higadata Levincha. Next line, Bayom Hahu. Next line, Lamar. Next line, Bavor Zeh. Next line, Asa Hashem Li. Next line, B'tzeisi Mimitzrayim. This is the pasuk. V'higadata Levincha B'yomahu Lamar Bavor Zeh Asa Hashem Li B'tzeisi Mimitzrayim. That is the pasuk. That is the source of the entire Seder. Now we will go back and see that section by section we are following the order of that pasuk. So, we've already established that we set up an awareness of the constant intermingling of Abdus and Cheiros. Correct? We even spoke about, remember this, that there's two types of Pesach, the Pesach of Geula, where we remember the Nisan that took place, Pesach Matzah Marah, but then there's the Pesach of Golus, where we're hoping the Nisan will take place. Remember that? Bavor Zevart? Not Zeh Bavor, but Bavor Zeh? Okay. So first we set up this intermingling of Avdus and Cheiros, which is the concept of the night. And then we start with V'higadata Levincha. V'higadata Levincha is the beginning, starting with Avadim Hayinu. But it's not the story. The first thing we do is we talk about the parameters of the halacha of V'higadata Levincha. Okay? Not other halachas, but the halachas of V'higadata Levincha. So under the concept of V'higadata Levincha, you begin with Avadim Hayinu. What we're telling the children is how this story is important in their life, how it changed their life, and how there's a mitzvah of V'higadata Levincha irrelevant, it is regardless of everybody's, what they know. We've spoken about this, right? To keep the story alive. The halachas that come afterwards, the halacha of the information about Rabbi Akiva and all of his colleagues, that extends that halacha, V'higadata Levincha. What about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? He's speaking about the mitzvah of Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, and if it's relevant, mornings, also nights, this world, next world. But we said that this really doesn't, at first glance, have anything to do with the mitzvah of the night, which is V'higadata Levincha B'yomahu. Right? It seems to be that the halacha, that the Baal Haggadah is distinguishing here between the ongoing regular mitzvah of Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, which is morning and night, according to Chachamim, this world and the next world. That halacha of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim does not in any way absolve a person from teaching their children the story on this night. That don't confuse the two halachas. You can have a constant halacha of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, but that doesn't in any way take away from the halachas of V'higadata Levincha. Not to confuse the two. Now, V'higadata Levincha, we continue. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, we said that's a strange pasuk, introducing the four children. And here are the four children, and as we kind of said before, you have an obligation to teach them when they ask questions, and the main thing is V'she'eno De'elishol, that's really the essence of it, to teach when they don't ask questions. What is Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu? Before we begin to speak about the four children, we think about the person sitting at the Seder. Maybe that person has no children to speak to. Not even a Rasha. Not even a She'enu De'elishol. What if the person has no story, nobody to tell the story to? The V'higadata Levincha doesn't seem to apply to that person because they have nobody else. To keep the story alive to themselves, speaking about it, is not much of a consolation. So we're told, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately, is every person, even people who have a feeling that they've lost their place in this world, they have no connection to the future. Maybe they have produced future offspring, but those offspring have no connection to the past. The person has felt as if the cushion is ripped out from under their feet, as if they have no place, as if they're floundering, as if the mission of the Jewish people, which is meant to proceed from generation to generation, the purpose, they have no place in that. It ends with them. It goes nowhere else. We comfort such a person who doesn't have anyone to continue telling this to by telling that person, in the end, everybody's place can be found in the larger place called HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the makom for everybody. We also say HaMakom Yenachem Eschem at a Levi, at a Shiva, because the person feels that way. They feel as if they've come unhinged. They have no connection to the things that anchor them anymore. They're floating. They're floating with nothing to anchor them. We tell them Hashem is always your makom. If it would be the case that a person, it feels like they don't serve a role here, because to what end is their existence if they're not part of the perpetuation of this story, we comfort them by telling them Baruch HaMakom. Hashem gave the Torah, and the Torah is alive, and it's not really dependent on the people in the end. It exists as an absolute truth. And as long as the person is connected and connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they still have a role in the story that is playing itself out. Now, we just finished describing the Higadah to Levincha. How much, who has to say it, to what kind of children, in what forms you need to tell the answer to different children, you answer it differently. What's the next phrase in the Pasuk? After Higadah to Levincha, what's the next phrase? Higadah to Levincha, Bayom Hahu. So the next paragraph in the Haggadah is Yachol Mirosh Chodesh. What does Bayom Hahu mean? So now that's why we didn't put this halacha before the four children with the other halachas, because those halachas were about Higadah to Levincha. Who has to, and for how long do you have to, and to what extent do you have to, and to which children do you have to. But now we're into the next part, Higadah to Levincha Bayom Hahu. These are different halachas. Which day? So we have Yachol Mirosh Chodesh, maybe Rosh Chodesh, maybe when it's still daytime, no, when it's night. Okay? What's the next word in the pasuk of the proof text pasuk? V'haygadah to levin chavyom hahu? Lemor. Lemor is now the whole story. That is magid. Lemor is to say it over, and that's mitchila ovdei avodah zarah. Now we start with the story. 8 paragraphs in, we have finished with our obligation of the higadah to levincha, knowing those parameters. Bayom hahu, knowing those parameters. Now we're into lemor. Lemar is the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim up until the end of Dayenu and Al Achat Kama Vakama. What's the next phrase in the pasuk? Bavor Zeh. So what do we immediately find? Baban Gamliel Haya Omer. Kol Shelo Omer Shlosha Devarim Elu BePesach. Whoever didn't say these three things is not. He didn't do his mitzvah. He didn't fulfill his obligation. Pesach Matzamar. So this is not just another halacha of Seder night. There, it doesn't go into the Higadah to Levincha section. It doesn't go into the Bayom Hahu section. It goes into the section of Bavor Zeh. What does Bavor Zeh mean? Bavor Zeh means when you have Pesach, Matzah, and Marah. Okay, Bavor Zeh. What's next in the proof text section? Asa Hashem Li. So what's the next paragraph? Immediately, Bechol Dor Vador. Chayav Adam, Lirosas Atmo, Kilohu Yatzam Mitzrayim. A person has to see themselves as if they went out of Mitzrayim. That's why it's not included in the beginning of the Higadah to Levincha section, because there we were talking about keeping the story alive as part of the halacha of telling your children. Here, seeing yourself that you went out of Mitzrayim is part of the law of Asa Hashem Li. Hashem did this to me. So we have Higadah to Levincha Bayom Hahu, Lemar, Bavor Zeh, Pesach Matzamar, Asa Hashem Li, Hashem has done this to me. And therefore we say that, and here is where the Haggadah quotes the whole Pasuk again. It says, Bechol Dor V'dor, in every generation, a person has to see themselves like they went out of Mitzrayim. Shenemar, as it says, V'higadah to Levincha, Bayom Hahu, Lemar, Bavor Zeh, Asa Hashem Li, That's why you have to now remember that you were not, it was like you yourself. Betseisi mi Mitzrayim. So how do we fulfill Betseisi mi Mitzrayim? What's next? No, what's next? Hallel. Betseisi Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. It's the only paragraph of the Hallel included. Betseisi Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. So this, I would love to say, is all my concoction. But it's the brilliant Malbim. And this is a classic, by the way. This is a classic. It opens up the whole Haggadah. So we have now fulfilled now all the nuances of the Pasuk, the Higadah to Levincha, Biomahu, Lemor, Bavorzeh, Asashem Li, Betseisi Mi Mitzrayim. Now my grandfather used to say, we had so many beautiful Siddurim by my grandfather, of Schwab, and he had a magnificent voice in his better years, absolutely beautiful, and he was extremely musical, wrote so many Nagunim, and I remember it was always warm in the room because always a lot of family, and he would open the windows, you know, and we would sing, and his Siddurim didn't go till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. He was very machban eating Afikom by Chatzos, which we're going to talk about, but people would finish their Siddurim and walk on the street and stand under the window. He had such a beautiful voice. And this is one of the things where he sang many things, but I just remembering, you know, it's nostalgic to think about those Siddurim. But one of the things I remember, many of the things, I remember a lot, thank God, but one of the things I remember that he used to say that related to a person has to see themselves as if they went out of Mitzrayim. He used to say that, said, I burned my hands when I was 8 years old. And it was terribly burned and scarred, but it healed. Now I'm 80. Am I telling the truth or am I lying if I say that I burnt this hand, almost 80 years ago, 72 years ago? Now, every single cell, virtually, in this hand has been replaced. There are some very long-lasting cells in the human body, but most of the cells constantly replenish themselves. There's really almost not one cell still in this hand that was there then. So is it the same hand or is it not the same hand? Was this hand burned? It says that's the Jewish people. We are a body. We are an entity called Knesset Yisrael. Okay? We are like, imagine a maturing, developing human being. The human being continues to exist, but all the cells are changed, right? Are interchanged with new cells. But the human being continues to exist. And you might not even recognize someone later in life, you know, and even remember who they were earlier in life, because so much changes. The features of the person changes, they mature, and they've gone through various experiences. Said the Jewish people, we are the same Jewish people who came out of Mitzrayim. The parts have changed, but make no mistakes about it, it is the very same entity. It's called Knesset Yisrael, and it's indestructible, and it's eternal, and will continue to exist. And everybody plays a role, and some people play different roles, more significant and a little less significant. Everyone's significant in their own way, but some, you know, like are the heart, and some are the skin, and different roles. But everybody is part of an ongoing entity, and it's critical that we see ourselves as just further along in the process, but completely connected to who we were then. And so we've come to the end of Magid. And the bracha we make, and this is the second part here, which I want to focus on, is we talk about that we will sing Shir Chadash, a new song, Al Geula Seinu, V'al Pedus Nafshenu, Baruch Ata Hashem Goal Yisrael, and that's the bracha before we drink the second cup of wine, the end of the Magid. What is the difference between Geula and Pidyon? Well, let's notice a few differences. First of all, the Geula. When we say, how do we use that word in conversation? We say Goel Hadam, Geulas Mitzrayim. It's really a verb, right? It's a verb, and it's usually attached to a subject. The Goel Hadam is the one who comes to stand up for the death of a relative, right? Or Geulas Mitzrayim is the redemption from Egypt. It's used really as a verb, and it doesn't really talk about the state of the one being redeemed. It really talks about the redeemer, right? Goel Hadam, the person who comes in to stand up for the relatives, stand up for the relatives' blood is called the Goel Hadam. But we don't discuss the actual person being redeemed here. Geulas Mitzrayim, as Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and redeemed us from Mitzrayim. However, when you talk about pigeon, it's almost like an adjective describing the one that is saved. So you say, for example here, Padus Nafshenu, the salvation of our souls. Our souls were saved. So one we're speaking about the closest of kin, the Goel, and one we're speaking about the redeemed. Correct? You see, that's generally how these words are used. The Geula takes place with open nisim. It demands open nisim. Yad chazaka zro netuya. But the pigeon is subtle, and it takes place within the victim, I say, the redeemed one. The redeemed one has now changed in status. So, you know, think about a pigeon haben, right? The pigeon haben has changed the status of this child to actually a lower status. Really, it reminds us that originally all the firstborns were dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. So the status is an abstract concept. That it's a person's awareness of who they are. That's changed. But Geula is an open, obvious fact that something is taking place for everybody to see. Essentially, the difference between Geula and Pidyon is the purpose of Geula. Like the Goel Hadam who comes, somebody's killed, and the Goel Hadam comes to avenge that. Or, for example, somebody's field was sold out of their Nachala, and somebody from the family comes to redeem the field and bring it back into the Nachala. Okay? The concept of Geula is that the closest of kin is making a very important statement that everybody has to know, and the statement is, he is mine. He's my relative. That field is from my Nachala. This person you killed was my closest relative. He's mine. It's about the possession, really, the possessiveness of the Goel for the one that was the victim. And what's important in Geula is that the world, in this case, should know who this victim belongs to. And it's meant to teach a lesson that who you started up with and who you disgraced and who you enslaved is mine. And therefore, Geula always is with open miracles. To teach the world, this is mine, B'ni B'chori Yisrael. It's my firstborn child, and I'm the Goel. I'm coming to avenge him. It's about the Goel. It's making the Goel known in the world, which changes the status of the victim. Notice, by the way, this is a side point. Every time we encountered a firstborn and a secondborn, since Adam gave and Chava gave birth to Cain and Hevel, the firstborn always was lost, disgraced, banished, lost their position, right? All through Cain and Hevel, okay? First of all, Hevel was killed. Cain killed Hevel, I'm sorry, and Cain was banished, right? Then you get Shem, Cham, and Yafes, right? Shem, Cham, and Yafes, but the truth is that, hold that one for a minute. Let's go to our Avos, okay? You have Yishmael and Yitzchak. Yishmael loses position. You have Yaakov and Esav. Okay, Yaakov really is meant to be the Bechor, but he becomes, you know, he has to buy the Bechor later. Then you have Leah's for children. Reuven loses it. Okay, goes to Yehuda. Okay, what about Menashe and Ephraim? There's a switch there. Okay, even Moshe and Aaron. I mean, Aaron was very great, but Moshe was the younger child. Every time you have a firstborn, secondborn situation, you see, even all the firstborns in the desert lost their position, right? So, to the Kohanim. So, every time you have a firstborn, you always see somehow they don't maintain that position. Except in one case, B'ni B'chori Yisrael. Because that was not a accident of birth, so to speak. It was earned. This is a meritocracy. It goes by merit. B'ni B'chori Yisrael is never to be exchanged. Okay? So you have here HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the Geula is saying, this is my firstborn child. That's imperative. That's the most important thing to know. By pigeon, it's different. The object of pigeon is alleviation of the plight of the victim. Whereas by Goel, it's not about alleviating the suffering of the victim, it's about knowing the Redeemer. by pidyon, it's alleviating the plight, and that can take place without nisim. That doesn't have to prove Hashem's existence. That's to save this person from his suffering. It's not there to prove that Hashem exists and how our relationship is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The suffering that we were saved from here, we say pidus nafshenu, is the emotional, psychological suffering of feeling that we were our purpose with someone else's purpose. That's how a slave feels. I am not living for myself. I'm living someone else's dream to fulfill someone else's purpose. It's the ultimate sense of being demeaned, of being meaningless in their own right. That's the suffering that we exchanged for the status of being people who live out, who are free to live out their purpose and their mission. Charos, cheros, right? Engraved, freedom. By the way, no matter what will happen to the Jewish people after this event, and we have been enslaved physically since then, but never again psychologically, spiritually, have we ever again fallen into that state of feeling purposeless, of being someone else's tool for their dreams. Never again. The Jewish people can be enslaved and tortured after this, but in our minds, we have already been redeemed and will never, ever be sucked back into that feeling that we have no story to tell. We don't represent a purpose and a mission. We're somebody, we're just a tool in someone else's, for someone else's enjoyment. Notice that when we use the phrase goel, we always relate it to that it makes the world aware who our Redeemer is. It makes the Redeemer's name great. So, for example, Umevi goel, livnei b'nei hem. What are the next words? Laman Shemo. The act of Geula is to make Hashem's name great and to make the world realize that Klal Yisrael are His. They're mine. I avenge their pain. For example, Ugalenu Mehera, what are the next words? Laman Shemecha. It's always associated with the name of Hashem being known. And what David HaMelech says, ultimately, he sums it all up, Karva El Nafshi Ga'ala. Karva, that's like Karov, relative. When you're close to my nefesh, like a relative, you're my korov, you're my relative, and that's the geula, when people know that who is the goel hadam. Ultimately, in the end, when we eat the afikomen, we put the entire thing, the entire constant, as we said, ebb and flow, the interwovenness of avdus and cheros comes full circle. The matzah that we began the night with as lechem oni, talking about how this represents our avdus, that very same matzah is magically transformed at chatzos into the lechem that represents our cheros, right? That represents the tough one, what's hidden for us, what really people can't see, the end of the story. The end, when everything we went through, all of the avdus that we went through, will all of a sudden be taste-like, be known as part of the process of the cheros. Let me remind you what we talked about it on Purim, and with this we'll end. Remember what we said about Purim, that our enemies arise up, and they don't want us to reach our goal, which we see as the light at the end of the tunnel, the long tunnel of history. So they start pulling us in the other direction, right? Away from our goal. That's a malik ultimately. And Pesach and Purim, by the way, always must be next to each other. Okay? They one leads into the next. And Purim is the end of the year, and Pesach, of course, is the beginning. It's the full circle. And we talked about on Purim how the enemy takes us and rips us away from the direction we're going in and forces us, pulls us this way in the other direction. But there's one thing that the enemy doesn't realize. That the road they're traveling is a road, imagine, that goes around like the surface of the globe. It goes all the way around, like around the edge, outer rim of a ball, right? So as far as they're pulling us in the other direction, they will arrive at where we were intending to go anyway. It'll be the longer route, the more painful route. We wish we wouldn't have to go that route, but make no mistakes about it. In the end of the year, in the end of time, we will come right back to where they were trying to take us away from. That really is the essence of Ein Od Milvado. There's no other destination but ultimately ending up face-to-face with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All roads lead there. They will bring us further. Look, as a terrible experience, okay? We talked about this with Purim. And we compared it to... Purim was the good, you know, like a Holocaust, it didn't happen. The Holocaust is, it did happen. But notice what's interesting about both of them. In the end, right, Haman, what did he want to do? Annihilate the Jewish people. Destroy them. In the end, because of Haman himself, a Jew was the queen, and Mordechai, the Jew, was the most powerful man, and Esther had a child, and that child brought back, built the Beis HaMikdash, and led the people, eventually went back. There's everything he was working against, he made it happen. He brought them back to Israel and built them a Beis HaMikdash by putting Esther in there. Look at the Holocaust, Lahavdil, 1,000 Havdalos. Hitler tried to destroy us. Yes, it wasn't the outcome of Purim. The Magefa, you know, the decree was not annulled. But in the end, Hitler, who tried to destroy the Jewish people, what did he do for us? It was because of him that Eretz Yisrael became a state. It was because of him that the Kibbutz Golios, everybody came streaming back to Eretz Yisrael. It was because of him, right? He forced it. So the point is, and we're stronger, and Torah is being built and all of that, and we have an army to defend ourselves because of him, pretty much. Okay, so basically the Rishayim pull us in the other direction. But they will come around, bringing us, pulling us right to face with Hashem and our destiny and the Geula. They're doing it. They just don't realize what they're doing. And it's not the most efficient way to get there. But the point of the matzah is this. This is our lechem oni, bread of affliction. And we eat it through the course of this world. And we go through many long periods of avdus and gullus, no question about it. But in the end, that very matzah that we ate first as lechem oni is transformed, and we realize it's suffon, it's the schar, it's the reward. We're here. We're here. We arrived. There's nothing else after. There's no more mitzvahs to do afterwards. This is the last mitzvah. You don't eat anything afterwards. We've arrived. We've reached our goal. We've put in the hard work, and here we are at the end. That is the miracle of the matzah, the secret of the matzah. And so Pesach is about the intermingling of the avdus and the cheiros, but we get courage and we get hope that we persevere, we will see, we will come, we will get a glimpse of the future, and we will not, you know, become hopeless. And we will continue telling the children and continue insisting to all of history that what Hashem started back there, we are the same Knesset Yisrael. What Hashem started there is alive and well and moving forward. Okay, everybody. We'll stop here.